Falls, W228 EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Jury deliberations continue today in the case of mother and daughter election workers in Georgia who say they've been getting threats ever since Rudy Giuliani began spreading lies about them after the 2020 vote. CBS's Scott McFarlane.
The women's attorney says Giuliani continues to defame the Georgia election workers. Giuliani's attorney says the former mayor didn't take the stand out of respect for Moss and Freeman.
A New York City jury deliberating the assault case against actor Jonathan Majors involved his former girlfriend, Grace Jabari. Correspondent Jerika Duncan.
Jabari says Majors assaulted her, leaving a cut behind her ear and a fractured finger. The next day, Majors called 911 saying he found Jabari unconscious in their shared Manhattan apartment.
His office says President Mahmoud Abbas told the White House Jake Sullivan today Gaza is an integral part of the Palestinian state and any attempt to isolate any part of it is unacceptable. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A Wisconsin corn mill agrees to pay close to $2 million in penalties and make major safety improvements. That's after the explosion in Cambria 6 years ago that killed six workers and injured some others. Didion Milling is required to develop a safety system and work closely with federal safety regulators. Two company officials were convicted in October of falsifying documents and obstructing the OSHA investigation. Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says a deal approved by state university leaders this week is, quote, just the first step. Wisconsin's most powerful Republican says he wants to eliminate what he calls cancerous diversity practices on campus. Milwaukee State Representative Dora Drake tweets, the fight for underrepresented groups continues. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. Eau Claire City Council President Emily Burge spoke out against a billboard questioning the relocation of 75 refugees to the city. In a statement, she said, quote, Eau Claire strives to be welcoming to all, no matter where you are from. I am saddened that a few area extremists continue to spread disinformation that only harms our community. I am concerned about how this xenophobic message impacts our immigrants, refugees, and city as a whole. The refugees are expected to be brought to Eau Claire in 2024. The Wisconsin State Patrol has announced it will kick off its Drive Sober or Get Pulled Over campaign for the holiday season this Friday. Officers will be increasing enforcement to find and stop impaired drivers during the busy holiday traveling season from December 15th to January 1st. Residents should plan a safe ride ahead of the holiday season if they plan on consuming alcohol or drugs or call a taxi or rideshare service and should contact law enforcement if they suspect another driver on the road is impaired. And that's what you need to know. I'm James Kelly, WCFW News.
When I first had my baby, I'd get comments all the time about how happy I must be. I remember thinking, I want to be happy. Why don't I feel that way? It was hard to admit that, even to my doctor. But I'm glad I did. She told me it was postpartum depression, and that is very treatable. These days, things are feeling good, and we're both happier about that. Right, little man? I'll take that as a yes.
Mental health care is working for Simone. See what it can do for you at mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
The Badgers volleyball season comes to an end. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Badgers women's volleyball team tied the match at one apiece, but the Texas Longhorns, who won the national championship last year, took over up 15-3 in the third set and never looked back. Texas advances to the NCAA finals on Sunday against Nebraska. Wisconsin returns home today with a final season record of 30 wins against just 4 losses. Men's college basketball, the Badgers with a win at home, 75-60 over Jacksonville State. NFL, the Packers have a problem. A.J. Dillon, their most productive running back this season, suffered a broken thumb in the loss to the Giants Monday night. It doesn't look good for Dillon to play Sunday against the Buccaneers.
If there is some hurt, not making it a bigger issue than it is down the road. And then the next question is, will I be able to go out there and positively impact the team with me being out there? And so, you know, we still got some days left in the week. And, you know, those questions I got to figure out myself.
That's Packers running back A.J. Dillon. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Mostly cloudy today. We'll get to around 43 this afternoon with a few scattered showers possible by late this afternoon. The wind out of the south at 5 to 10. Tonight, rain likely. We could get a quarter inch or more tonight. Our low down to 34. Tomorrow, we'll start with a few showers in the morning, then cloudy all day with a high of 39. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 33.
As goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
Anybody who's ever breastfed a child knows that breast milk is liquid gold. Preserve it at all costs.
Oh, that's what Kristen was talking about. Yeah. Freezing it, like pumping, freezing. She's like, I have bricks of it. I'm like, this sounds like a reboot of Breaking Bad. Like, this is...
In the breast
Breaking breast. Breaking breast.
Breaking breast. Well done.
As goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Brock. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. Tell a friend what's on tap.
There's a new station in town with conversation about Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Ding dong.
Burl Ives.
I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a couple of
I wonder how many people in the audience even know who Burl Ives is. I know. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday's my co-host, Sandy Williams. And before we get into our next subject, let's go to Susan. Good morning to you, Susan.
Morning.
How you doing?
I'm fine, and I'm 3 years older than you, so I actually know who Burl Ives is.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay, I'll give you that.
I love your program, and I read obviously a lot. I wanted to read just a small portion of a book that I was reading last night, and the founders had utmost confidence in the wisdom and grace of George Washington, but they were not convinced that every future president would be so honorable. This is why Article 2 of our Constitution details precisely what the president must pledge to faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. And when I look at Joe Biden, he's doing exactly that. As far as Trump is concerned, he did not. He wanted to hold on to power and the money that it brought him and the fame that he brought him. And it's so sad for me to see the American people who defend him and the things that he has done and the insurrection that occurred and a number of people who were injured and killed at that activity. He needs to be held accountable, and that's all I'm going to say.
Well, you know, Susan, you're one of my favorite callers. Sandy, you want to respond to that?
Well, no, I mean, no, she's absolutely right. I think the most fearful and the warning that has been given to us by Liz Cheney and Adam Kunzinger and Mitt Romney and almost all of the ex-cabinet officials who served under Donald Trump is just exactly that this man is all about authoritarianism and sort of the narcissistic claim to personal power and is not there to preserve the Constitution, but is actually endangering it. And so, you know, what I'm concerned about is the number of people who want to ignore that in the name of what they believe to be their personal prosperity. You know, that I was good, things were good in 2016 to 2020, and I want to go back to that time period. First of all, that's ignoring the fact that things are just as good now as they were then. But number two, the idea that you would put prosperity ahead of our Constitution is just, it's mind-boggling.
Well, the fact that she talked about that and what the president's responsibilities really are.
Yeah.
I think are telling, and it's important that she brought that up because maybe people have forgotten or maybe people didn't know. But that's how you measure those things, right? I mean,
yeah, that's actually when you get sworn in as president, that's what you get sworn in to do.
All right, so let's do this. So, Sandy, I was thinking about, you know, the budget of the United States. And a while back, I took some time out to break it down and talk about where the money went and, you know, discretionary, non-discretionary, all those different things, because people seem to think there's an endless pool of money in our government, and there are outlays, some mandatory, some not.
Well, I think what's wrong with the way we've analyzed, number one, I think it's very good that we analyze this. Number two, I think what's wrong with it is that the debate always comes down to where can we cut and where can we, and including taxes, okay? So everything in Washington, the discussion seems to be cutting. We cut expenditures and we cut taxes. Where do we cut expenditures? And when you analyze, when we get through with this analysis, I think people will see that there's not much meat on those bones to cut, and that more revenue is really the problem, and that the tax cuts that were implemented during the Trump administration have played a big role in, number one, the size of the deficits we're currently experiencing, and number two, our inability to implement programs that are would actually be important to Tom, Dick, and Mary, and might change this defective architecture in our economy. We have the median family that has a budget that can't accommodate the health care costs and the cost of child daycare and the cost of saving for a pension and the cost of paying back student debt on top of all of the other costs that the median family experiences. That, you know, it doesn't work, right? They don't make enough money as two breadwinners at the median level to cover all their costs. They live paycheck to paycheck without savings.
So 2021, Donald Trump was the president.
Well, 2021 is the last. He wasn't president, but it was
his last budget.
His budget.
So yeah, his budget.
The budget that was passed under Trump was
$4.174 trillion. And so here's what we need to know. You know, that was the revenue.
Let's go to the revenue side. How much money do we get, and from what are the sources of that money?
The United States government took in $4.174 trillion in 2022. The income tax was $2.39 trillion towards that $4.17 trillion.
So more than half of the money was raised from individual income taxes.
Social Security, $1.462 trillion.
So the FICA tax, the Social Security tax, was more than a quarter.
Yeah, 35%.
Yep.
Of that $4.174 trillion. Corporate tax rate, $391 billion. It only made up 9%.
Right.
Of the dollars revenue that came into.
And one of the reasons for that is the way the corporate tax is set up. It has a nominal rate, but then there are all sorts of deductions that are allowed, which are meant to be incentives for certain kind of conduct. And one of the biggest changes in the Trump tax cut, other than cutting the corporate tax rate, was to increase, to create some deductions which were gigantic. The most gigantic of which is to allow businesses to expense in the first year the total cost of any capital addition.
So new machinery.
So let's say that a company would add a machine, which on their from an accounting standpoint would be depreciated over 15 years or 10 years. Let's say they have a $1 billion machine; it would be depreciated over 10 years. That would mean that on their financials, the deduction would be $100 million a year. But for their tax purposes, they can take a $1 billion tax deduction in year one.
On the top.
So that $1 billion might cover more than their earnings. They might only have $800 million of earnings. So the $1 billion deduction eliminates all their corporate tax in year one, and they still have a loss carry forward of that $200 million to next year. And if they make another capital expenditure next year, They don't pay any taxes then either. So that deduction alone has had a significant impact on the level of revenue derived from corporations.
Sandy, I was really, when I looked at the fact that only $391 billion, only 9% of the $4.174 trillion revenue came from business. I just dumbfounded. I would have thought that would have at least been in the trillions of dollars at to say the least. But clearly you just talked about all the different.
Well, and there are lots of other deductions, too. An accelerated depreciation was the old way of doing it. This is like super. This is accelerated depreciation on steroids, what they've now adapted. And there are other other forms, oil depletion allowance, all kinds of things.
So let's excise tax.
Which includes tariffs.
Yeah, custom and tariffs. That's $141 billion or 3%. What do you mean by tariffs and
tariffs are the are the duties on imported goods. So, you know, remember Trump was increasing tariffs on Chinese to try and make it harder for Chinese goods to compete in the United States, et cetera.
Earnings from the Federal Reserve holdings, $102 billion, 2%.
So that is during the quantitative easing.
What does that mean?
Well, when the government was buying its own treasury instruments, so they were issuing debt, but they were taking it into the treasury. So it was just a way of putting money out in the economy, actually, without borrowing it from the public. And that earned interest, but it was really just a bookkeeping interest level because it was taking money out of one pocket of the federal government, putting it into the other pocket. And so that's funny money.
Earnings from the Federal Reserve holdings, $102 billion, 2%. That's interest payments on the U.S. Treasury debt the Fed acquired.
Yeah, that's what we just talked
about. Okay, estate taxes and other miscellaneous revenue supply the remaining 1.5%.
Well, and incidentally, estate taxes are the way you tax wealth transfers. So the billionaire, so that just shows us that currently money is passed from one generation to another
without being taxed. Yes. Yeah, I know there's an argument and a fight because they've been talking about raising estate taxes.
Well, there used to be significant estate taxes, and that was something that was eliminated in the last couple of decades.
Okay. Spending in 2024, $6.011 trillion. We just talked about the fact that only 4.74.
Right, so that's a 1.3
that we took in.
So that's a 1.3 or 4 trillion dollar deficit. That's
from the beginning.
The difference between revenues and expenditures deficit. That's we can sit around the dinner table and figure that one
out. So the deficits are going to be based almost just automatic. They're built into the system.
Well, they're built into the system depending on the revenue, right? So
right.
You could increase the revenue and decrease the deficit right there. So, you know, if you could increase the revenue by $500 billion.
So Sandy, the $64,000 question, how is it possible to increase the incoming
revenue?
Dollars? Yeah.
Well,
what's the easiest way?
You reverse the tax cut.
Okay.
You reverse the Trump tax cut, and that would be one way.
844-967-2789. Got a lot to cover. We'd love you to join us in the conversation. Friday, it means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And don't touch that dial. We'll be returning.
Jolly Christmas. And in case you don't hear, oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year.
.5 The Tap.
Latrell spent more than 8 years in foster care. His world changed when he was adopted at 15 with help from the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption.
I think about how much we love him, and I wish we could have had him for his entire childhood.
The foundation is changing the lives of thousands of teens waiting in foster care. You can help. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org. Lexi spent more than 6 years in foster care.
Before I was adopted, I felt alone.
With help from the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption, Lexi now has a forever family and the foundation for a bright future.
Adoption changed me for the better. I feel like I can be whoever I want to be.
You can help find permanent homes for children still lingering in foster care. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Ooh, Merry Christmas.
Christmas comes this time each year.
Ooh.
Well, way up north where the air gets cold, there's a tale about Christmas that you've all been told.
That's the Beach Boys, right?
And it's the Beach Boys.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, Texas, the same number. You know, Sandy, it's kind of...
Brian Wilson.
It's kind of... When you hear, you know, songs that people made, they really have their own distinctive...
sound.
Yeah. I knew right away it was the Beach Boys. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, Texas, that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday is my co-host, Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, spending 2022, $6.11 65% pays for mandated benefits. So what are mandated benefits?
Well, mandated benefits are the ones that are sort of cast in stone that we all count on, many of which we actually paid in for. So like Social Security and Medicare are things that people pay for over the period of their lifetime and now are drawing back the benefits of. And incidentally, Medicare is something you pay for while you're receiving it as well. You pay premiums, insurance premiums that are based on income. So you've got Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security.
So discretionary spending pays for everything else. The discretionary spending will be $1.688 trillion. U.S. Congress appropriates this amount each year using the president's budget as a starting point. Interest on that debt is $305 billion each year.
And that $305 billion is in addition to the $1.6. So you end up with $2 trillion of expenditures. The interest rate is not discretionary either. So that's why it would fit in a category other than discretionary income. If the country doesn't pay its interest, we're in big trouble.
So interest on $30 trillion federal debt is the fastest growing federal expense.
Well, and of course, the interest grows for two reasons. If the interest rate on the debt stayed the same, but the debt grew, then the interest payment goes up by the same percentage as the increase in the national debt. However, if the national debt goes up and interest rate goes up, then the interest payment goes up at a rate faster than the increase in the national debt, and it goes up because each dollar of national debt is now paying a higher interest rate. We've been paying historically low interest rates on our national debt for the last 13 years, and it's now forecast that we're going to start morphing that cost of debt upwards towards something like a long-term average norm. Interestingly, the yield on treasuries is going down right now. So there was a period where the interest on treasuries looked like it could be up in the 6% range or 5% range in the future. It's now going down based on investor profiles.
So a question may be, who do we owe the debt to?
Well, we owe the debt to the people who owe the treasury,
who own the treasury bonds.
Bills, okay,
right.
And so those treasury bills are owned by retirement funds, they're owned by endowments, they're owned by individuals, they're owned by foreign countries who are holding dollars because they use dollars for their international trade. And that segment is exceedingly important because there are much of our debt is held internationally by the people who are holding dollars because the dollar is the world currency. And that's one of the fears about losing the status of world currency, because if we were to lose that status, the demand for our treasuries would go down materially, which would make it harder for us to carry our debt.
So we've never defaulted on that debt in the history of our nation.
No.
there's been a couple times that we've come really close. Do you think that'll ever happen?
Well, defaulting on the debt, no, I don't think it'll ever happen. I mean, the only way it would happen is if Congress failed to increase the debt limit, because we are always in a position to essentially create enough money to pay the debt. And the reason why the world is content currently with the notion that the U.S. might pay off its debt with money it creates is that the dollar itself has been very stable. And if we created more dollars, so long as that trust in the dollar was sustained, the dollar would continue to have a stable value.
So let me ask you, when you say create the dollars, you mean printing?
Well, it's people call it printing dollars, but when we run a deficit and we borrow money, we're creating dollars.
Yeah, so we're not just printing. You can't just go and say, well, we owe all this money, let's just print some paper, right?
It doesn't exactly work that way.
Okay. Mandatory spending, $4.18 trillion in 2022. Social Security, Medicare, $1.196 trillion. Unemployment compensation. So this is what mandatory spending is. And Social Security and Medicare, $1.196 trillion. It also includes unemployment compensation.
Which is
welfare programs.
But unemployment compensation is a small number, I'm confident.
It doesn't show the breakdown in that. Welfare programs, including Medicaid. Medicare is $766 billion. Medicaid is $571 billion.
Yes.
Of that $4.018 trillion of mandatory spending. Now, people can say Social Security, but Social Security is paid for by payroll taxes.
Right.
And interest and investments of our government. Now, I would say we need to go to discretionary spending next, because here, let me go here, Sandy. Mandatory spending makes up 66% of
budget. Let me just say, with respect to Social Security and Medicare, the FICA tax pays that, other than the premiums paid by Medicare recipients themselves. And that FICA tax currently has a ceiling. It's collected from people on the first up to $400,000 of income. People who earn more than $400,000 a year don't pay any FICA tax on the income above $400,000. And there are those who point at that lid right there as saying, this is a relief valve right here. All we have to do is remove that $400,000 ceiling and collect taxes from the very wealthy who are earning more than $400,000 a year on FICA, and we would create a bigger pot of money to support Social Security.
So before we get into discretionary spending, it's a good point you make. We can go back to the $6.11 trillion,
Well, I mean, the fact is that we've got $6.1 trillion of expenditures and $4.7 trillion of revenue. And what we need to focus on, as well as those expenditures, which is something that we have trouble getting Washington to focus on, is that revenue side.
Right.
And we need to look at how much that revenue side could or should be expanded. You pointed out the very small collection of corporate taxes, $390 billion, which was a small percentage. Also, the FICA tax is collected at the level it is. Only it could go up materially if that $400,000 ceiling. So it's possible to close the gap between $4.9 trillion and $6.2 trillion of expenditures on the revenue side, as well as shutting down expenditures.
All right, so we've got to go to a short hiatus. We'll return on the other side. 844-967-2789. Don't touch that dial. You know,
Merry Christmas. Christmas comes this time each year. Merry Christmas.
You're tapped in to the issues affecting the Valley and all of Wisconsin. Consider us the bartenders of friendly local talk. This is 93.5 The Tap.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin students pursuing careers in healthcare will now enter the workforce more quickly and easily. The state's public and private colleges and universities have a deal with the Department of Safety and Professional Services. It will streamline the process to get new graduates their professional licenses. Holiday shopping creates opportunities for scam artists. Courtney Anclam is a fraud expert with AARP Wisconsin. She says shoppers need to be careful in brick-and-mortar stores, too.
It's just making sure that gift cards haven't been tampered with before you purchase it. You can see the PIN number on the back when it should be covered and stuff like that.
Anclam says a lot of bogus retailers promote themselves aggressively on social media. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin State Building Commission and Governor Tony Evers have signed off on the project to build a new science and health sciences building at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. The $340 million project will replace Phillips Hall on the lower campus, and construction is expected to begin in July of 2024. The construction project is expected to take over 2 years to complete. The university also plans to turn the torn-down Phillips Hall site into additional parking and green space. A Barron County jury rejected an argument of insanity from a man who entered a guilty plea to child exploitation this week. Derek Salewski of Barron pleaded guilty to child sexual exploitation, but also pleaded innocent by insanity. The jury decided that Salewski did not have a mental disease or defect at the time of the crime after a two-day trial. Salewski faces up to 40 years in prison after being charged with downloading child pornography last year. He's scheduled to be sentenced on March 5th, 2024. And that's what you need to know. I'm James Kelly, WCFW News.
One in four Americans today are living with a disability. I'm one of them. People with disabilities are extremely talented, resilient problem solvers that have so much to offer. And we've got a trusted ally on our side, an organization we can rely on, Easter Seals. Easter Seals is leading the way to full equity, inclusion, and access to healthcare, employment, and education for people with disabilities, families, and communities. That's my Easter Seals. Make it yours.
Learn more and get involved at EasterSeals.com.
The Badgers volleyball season comes to an end. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Badgers women's volleyball team tied the match at one apiece, but the Texas Longhorns, who won the national championship last year, took over up 15-3 in the third set and never looked back. Texas advances to the NCAA finals on Sunday against Nebraska. Wisconsin returns home today with a final season record of 30 wins against just 4 losses. Men's college basketball, the Badgers with a win at home, 75-60 over Jacksonville State. NFL, the Packers have a problem. A.J. Dillon, their most productive running back this season, suffered a broken thumb in the loss to the Giants Monday night. It doesn't look good for Dillon to play Sunday against the Buccaneers.
If there is some hurt, not making it a bigger issue than it is down the road. And then the next question is, will I be able to go out there and positively impact the team with me being out there? And so, you know, we still got some days left in the week. And, you know, those questions I got to figure out myself.
That's Packers running back A.J. Dillon. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Mostly cloudy today. We'll get to around 43 this afternoon with a few scattered showers possible by late this afternoon. The wind out of the south at 5 to 10. Tonight, rain likely. We could get a quarter inch or more tonight. Our low down to 34. Tomorrow, we'll start with a few showers in the morning, then cloudy all day with a high of 39. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 35.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Tap into what Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley is talking about today. This is 93.5 The Tap.
Online at thetap.fm.
Santa Claus is coming to town. All right, welcome back. the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, it's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Let's try to expedite this a little quicker. So discretionary spending. U.S. Congress is in charge of discretionary spending. In 2021, President Trump requested $1.485 trillion. The breakdown was, the Department of Defense, $636 billion. Health and Human Services, $96 billion. Health and Human Services, $96 billion. Military, almost $700 billion.
Yeah.
You see a problem with Health and Human Services? Yeah.
Go finish the list because the numbers all go down.
Education, $66 billion. Veterans Administration, $105 billion.
Incidentally, that $105 should get tagged on to because the veterans.
The military.
Well, the military because the Veterans Administration
right.
costs have gone up materially because of the huge commitments we made to Afghanistan and Iraq.
Homeland Security, $49 billion, which should also go.
Well,
Homeland Security is different. The Department of Energy, $35 billion, which seems to be just a drop in the bucket to me. I don't know. Housing of Urban Development, $47 billion. State debt, $44.1 billion. NASA, $25.2 billion.
NASA?
Yeah.
NASA, the space age.
Yeah.
Space program.
$25.2 billion. Yeah. And I didn't know they were still doing anything.
Well, but now, so you understand, we haven't covered things like the FDA, the Federal Drug Administration, the Federal Aeronautics, the FAA, the FTA, we haven't covered any of the New Deal type. You know, there's a lot of arm waving in Washington about how the New Deal left us with this big government and heavy costs. But incidentally, the regulatory part of the federal government is very inexpensive, and so we have FDA. We have the Federal Trade Commission. We have the Federal Aeronautics. We have OSHA. We have the EPA. All of those are drops in the bucket.
Those are all regulatory.
And those are the New Deal programs, okay? That's what people wave their arm about and talk about the big government that we created. And really all that was left to us by the New Deal, other than Social Security, was the regulatory programs, which really we rely upon. The American public relies upon the Food and Drug Administration to make their food and drugs safe. We rely on the FAA to make our airplanes safe. And we saw with the Boeing Dreamliner the problems that can exist if the FDA doesn't do its job. We rely on FEMA to save us from disasters. Okay, all of those things are not expensive and are not areas which could presumably save many dollars if we cut them. Okay, so the big dollars that we've talked about are the ones that that could involve cutting. And what's the biggest dollar one?
Military. Well,
the defense budget and the current military budget, the one that was just adopted by Congress.
$886 billion.
$886 billion, which does not include the FAA, the VA portion.
It does not include the FBI, cybersecurity.
Or
National Nuclear Security.
Or VA.
VA, Homeland Security, Department of Veterans Affairs, State Department.
And in 2021, the budget that was formulated in 2021, I think you said the VA was over $100 billion. So if you add the VA onto the defense budget most recently adopted, we're over $1 trillion.
So Sandy, if you, again, in 2021, the defense Department of Defense had $636 billion, but then there was an addition of $228 billion for these other FBIs, cybersecurity, national nuclear homeland, all of these things. So if you look at the $886 billion they just appropriated, these other departments have not even been talked about. Yeah. I'm sure there's another $300 billion.
Well, I'm sure. Trying to stay connected because I'm not sure I put the FBI in the same rubric as the defense budget, but
they have though. That's
Brookings listed
right.
them as well. But if you just take the VA and add it on, you're over $1 trillion. And so I think
we have to understand the orders of magnitude in this budget are that the defense budget is immense. And the things that are called entitlements, which are really these programs set up for the people of the country, most of which are paid for out of FICA, special tax, are not things that ought to be cut, okay? And the people of this country can't possibly favor the notion of cutting them. The question is, how do we better finance them, and how do we better structure them so they are easily and sustainably born?
Hey, Sandy, the FDA budget for 2023.
Yeah.
$8.2 billion.
Right.
So what do we say the overall budget? $6 trillion.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about an apostrophe in a very long paragraph. That's what the budgets for these regulatory agencies are, very small, okay? And yes, they regulate businesses, and yes, the businesses might find it inconvenient to be regulated, but you know who doesn't, who shouldn't find it inconvenient for them to be regulated? The people. Because those things were all there to make sure that our FDA, food and drugs, are safe. And in fact, the world counted on that, and the world still counts on it with respect to our drugs and with respect to the food we export. And incidentally, do we import food from China? Well, we're reluctant to, because we're worried about the safety of that food, because it isn't regulated to the same extent as our FDA regulations.
You know, Sandy, it is, I mean, that's mind-boggling to me, only $8.4 billion, Food and Drug Administration. We constantly are talking about, hey, don't you buy the cantaloupe, yeah, because cantaloupes, you're running the risk.
Yeah, I mean,
That's because we don't have regulators enough to police that stuff before it gets out into.
Well, I mean, the regulation, the FDA, just all these regulations are designed to, and in fact, you know, the European Union does a very good job of regulating all these things. They really emulated us, but in many respects, their regulations are more comprehensive and more highly regarded by the rest of the world in terms of the security the rest of the world takes in the safety of the products. Okay?
So some of these products that we have in our nation can't be exported because the other nations say, hey,
it doesn't meet our standards. Yeah.
It's just true.
Yeah. So, I mean, I simply raise that as the point that there's lots of arm waving about how the New Deal has left us a legacy of big government and the cost of big government. And really, it's fallacious. It isn't borne out by the facts. The way we spend our money, I mean, to the extent that you would look at Social Security, I mean, the Medicaid and Medicare are legacies of the 1960s, not of the New Deal. Social Security, you can look at and say, okay, that came from that era. But Social Security is a fundamentally important program for Americans. And it's particularly fundamentally important now that defined benefits have been dropped by corporations and employers, and employees are left basically to fund their own retirements on top of what they might receive from Social Security.
So here's a breakdown of the non-defense discretionary outlays of 2022. Health is 27%. Education, training, employment, and social services, 15%. Transportation, 12%. Income, security, 10%. International affairs, 8%. Administration of justice, 7%. Administration of justice, 7%.
Well, that would be the courts. That would be the courts and the FBI.
Only 7% of...
Well, that's a pretty big number.
Community and regional development, 5%. Natural resources and environment, 5%. General science, space, and technology, 4%. And 7% other.
I mean, the point of those percentages is, if you're going to talk about cutting programs, where are you going to cut? Which ones of these, which segment of these do you think ought to be cut?
Well, some are saying education.
Well, yeah. I mean, but
But if
which
we're
is crazy.
But if we're worried about an investment in the future, what is the most significant investment in the future is education and
right.
ensuring good education. So, I mean, I think that what we really need to do as the people of this country is to ask our politicians to be much more specific in their conversations. When they talk about cutting expenditures and gnashing their teeth and rubbing their hands together about the deficit, we need to ask them, okay, well, let's talk about what causes the deficit and how do we cure it? And of course, you need to talk about revenue as well as expenditures. And then when you talk about cutting expenditures, you better talk about which expenditures and why. And we should pit that against the potential for raising revenue to avoid cutting the expenditure. And instead, we've ended up with sort of a one-way ratchet. We cut taxes, and then people want to come forward and talk about cutting expenditures so that we can come closer to a balanced budget. But why is it imbalanced? Well, one of the reasons it's imbalanced is we cut our taxes, our revenue stream.
Senator, they've got people believing it's the handouts that have caused us the deficits. And what you are pointing out is, number one, Social Security is not a handout.
No.
Medicare is not a handout.
No, and Medicaid is medical care for those who can't afford it.
Which long-term...
Do we as Americans want to pull the plug on that? Because what happens otherwise? Well, what happens otherwise is, one, we either have an immense health problem, or two, we go back to charity hospitals. And it isn't that society isn't bearing the cost. It's just that we're not bearing the cost through government. You know, that the hospitals, many of them were linked to religious organizations because, in fact, they were charity hospitals who gave their care to the poor. Now, that's become a serious problem. And hospitals today don't give their care to the poor because, number one, it's very expensive. And number two, Medicaid has provided the care for them. And don't we think as a community that that's the way it ought to be?
So, Sandy, let's talk, because you constantly talk about daycare and that there should be some way that as a society we need to find a way to kind of support that. And on the other side of this, people keep saying, we can't afford that. We can't afford that. So where would you take dollars out of this pie for daycare?
Well, I first of all, I think you can roll up your sleeves and evaluate the categories. The education, that number for education, much of that is federal grant programs
right.
that are federal grants to universities for research. And you could evaluate whether those investments, whether the investment in the research at the university could be pitted against child daycare as an offset or as a potential.
So you're not talking about new added rent.
Well, I think you can roll up your sleeve and figure out whether you add revenue or whether you readjust where it's spent. But I think what we ought to do is make sure that we spend money on the priorities that are the highest. And I think, obviously, the highest priorities we have are educating our young people to give them the best opportunity to participate successfully in our society and in the economy. And
making sure they're safe while their parents are working.
I mean, I think as a people, what we need to do is make sure we get the priorities straight in Washington, and then we start looking at the budget that includes both the revenue brought in by the government as well as how we expend that money, and we ought to start expending it with the right priorities in mind. And quite frankly, somehow we've got to get a grip on the defense budget, which is huge and getting huger. You know, we've got to get a grip on our foreign policy, what our foreign policy needs to be, and how that translates into defense.
All right, 844-967-2789. See you guys on the line. You got to pay some bills. We'll return.
Who's on? Who's coming to town?
You're listening to 93.5, The Tap.
Time out.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together.
Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
I was proud to be a soldier.
I told the truth and got kicked out.
And so I thought to myself, I'm taking this rule down.
If you're an LGBTQ plus veteran, your memories are important too. Share your story with the Library of Congress Veterans History Project, where firsthand accounts from U.S. military veterans are preserved and made accessible for researchers and future generations. Visit loc.gov/vets to submit your stories, photographs, and documents today.
93.5 The Tap.
Yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light.
Judy Garland.
Next year, yeah. And so
I didn't see it. Calvin picked those things out. Calvin did that. Yeah, Calvin. So yeah. She had a distinctive voice.
Yep,
beautiful voice. 844-967-2789. You're tuning into the Earl Ingram Show, Friday's last few minutes with Sandy Williams. Let's go right to the phone lines. Let's bring Bill from Oconomowoc. Good morning to you, Bill. Your thoughts?
Good morning. Good morning, Earl and Sandy. I'd like you to validate this statement. You were talking about balancing the budget and how people hate to help the poor, the indigent, the ones that can't help themselves. Would you guys agree the best investment this country can make is in the humanitarianism of our country? Because that's something that pays off, that has a direct rate of return back into our economy. Would you agree or disagree? I'll hang up.
Well, what clearly has a return is helping everyone participate in the economy successfully and participate in society successfully. And that accomplishment, number one, cuts out a lot of expenses that we otherwise have to deal with the inverse outcome, which is people not thriving and not succeeding in society and in the economy. So, yeah, I mean, that's all part of making sure that young people are educated and in a position to thrive in the economy. So, yeah.
All right. Let's go to William. I don't know where he's from. Oh, no. Okay. Let's go to Tom. Back to Tom. Tom, you say what?
Yes, Sandy. What would happen if we went back to Republican Eisenhower's tax rate? I know that Dick Cheney used to say deficits don't matter. But then, of course, they seem to matter when Democrats get into power. But what would happen if we actually rolled back even the Reagan tax cuts, or we went back to the Eisenhower tax cuts? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Well, one thing that would happen is tax attorneys and tax accountants would thrive, because the tax code was very complicated then. But you're right. During the period, during the 60s and 50s, the tax code included very high marginal rates. So you would be taxed at a low rate on the first dollars you earned, and then as you earn more dollars at the margin, your rate would go up, and the marginal rate got all the way up to well above 70%, I think. And I can remember in my lifespan, I became a partner in the law firm I was in 1977, and at that time period, at the margin, I was paying taxes that were very high. My average tax rate, averaged over the whole income, was not anywhere near the marginal rate. But people who earned a lot more than I did had a higher average rate, because they had more of it taxed at that high marginal rate.
Yeah, the idea then was that people should get rich, but they didn't need to get super rich, and that taxes could mitigate the opportunity to actually go off the charts in terms of developing wealth. And if we had that kind of a tax rate now, I'm confident that we would be in a different position with respect to deficits.
You know, Sandy, you always have talked about things being complex, and it's complicated. That's complicated. Fixing the budget deficit is not really complicated. When you say that, you know, we can tinker with some things on the business side and breaks that they get, tinker with some things on raising the tax rate for the wealthiest amongst us, and we can kind of see some light at the end of the tunnel if we just did those things.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could make sure that corporations had a minimum tax that they paid, regardless of deductions and the availability of deductions. And that would substantially raise revenue because there are many corporations, some of our biggest, who are paying no taxes as the result of the way the tax code is built. We could do the same with individuals. We could have a minimum tax that is paid by individuals, regardless of deductions and the availability of deductions. And we could also, that would raise revenue. And we could adjust some of the tax reductions we've made. You know, we survived we were a very prosperous country at the time of the Trump tax reductions. And it's not clear that those tax reductions were driven by anything more than the fact that they could accomplish it. It wasn't necessarily to be accomplished as the result of a need to accomplishment from a public policy standpoint. And so many of those tax cuts could be reevaluated to determine their need. And certainly some of that involved the special tax rates that relate to special gains.
So people may not remember this. Sandy, you may not remember this, but I remember when Trump was talking about the tax cut, you said, and I quote, "to give a tax cut at a time of prosperity is a big mistake."
Yeah.
You said those words.
Well, I did. I thought, number one, I thought it was throwing gasoline on the fire. We had a hot economy. We didn't need it. And the fact that we did it was going to necessarily lead to bigger deficits. And the idea that we would experience trillion-dollar deficits at a time of extreme prosperity. We experienced a $1 trillion deficit before the pandemic, okay, after the tax cut. And we experienced more deficit during the Trump 4 years than we did under any other 4-year period.
$8 trillion.
Yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't a wise policy, and it satisfied, I suppose, some drive for some people to experience prosperity, but it was putting prosperity above public policy.
And the point I'm making is you hit that on the head. It wasn't a Johnny come lately. You saw that and called it out at the time that it was happening. It was a mistake. Can't go back and undo it,
actually you could go back and undo it. Because it was enacted by Congress. They can do the reverse as well.
All right. Thank you, Sandy, as always, man. Great stuff. Thank you, Calvin. A great selection of music.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everybody else. Up next, Jane Madnair,
Carol Kane,
and Greg Bach. Have a great weekend.
Anyone knows what's on tap. It's the Chippewa Valley. We're talking about everything that's on tap in your world today. 93.5 The Tap. This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Folks, I tell you this much, the Cripescast is just the butter on my cheese.
Mike and Pat, the hosts of the Crash Dummies podcast.
I was born in Nigeria, actually.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was in Nigerian boarding school for like 3 years. It's like a prison sentence. We were trying to prison break our way out of there because they took our passports. I was trying to have people send me money so I can find a new passport.
Wait. You were in Nigeria trying to have people send you money?
Yeah, trying to escape.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Cripescast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. You are listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief, National.